Penguin Random House Audio presents The Women's War by Jenna Glass, read for you by Robin Miles. To all feminists, past and present, who have fought for women's rights, you are my heroes. Part 1. The Curse. Chapter 1. Every year, when the long days of summer began their inevitable decline into fall, the winds in Allwell changed direction. Instead of skimming along the coast, they began to blow inland, carrying the scent of sea and salt over the low-lying lands at the base of the cliffs. Unfortunately, they also carried the scent of the harbor, of rotting fish, of soggy streets, of too many unwashed bodies. The cliffs trapped most of the scent, confining all but the occasional foul whiff to the harbor district. And this year, when that wind change came, Alisoun Rebrina reconsidered her decision to continue living in her late husband's manor house, rather than taking up residence in the royal palace above the cliffs. Her father had all but begged her to pack up her children and join him. But decades after he divorced her mother and made Alice and her brother technically illegitimate, she still hadn't forgiven him. If the king wanted to spend time with his bastard daughter and his grandchildren, he could come down to the terrace district. Alice would not go to him. Besides, the manor house was her home and had been for more than 20 years. She'd learned to live with the occasional foul whiff long ago. On the most oppressive of autumn days, the gentry of the terrace district either stayed inside their perfumed homes or flocked to the risers for a trip up to the business district at the top of the cliffs. The merchants of the business district loved oppressive autumn days above all others. Alice and her children had spent the last 2 days shopping, and if her 18-year-old daughter Janelle had her way, they would spend a third, and probably a fourth, and a fifth. But Alisoun wasn't about to let a few smelly breezes keep her from her weekly visit to the Abbey of the Unwanted, where her mother had resided since the divorce. "But the Abbey will be intolerable," Janelle protested. "And you need some new gowns for winter, now that you're out of mourning." Alice suppressed a smile. She knew a disingenuous argument when she heard one. Just as she knew the moment they reached the business district, it wouldn't be her own gowns they ended up shopping for. "I do need new gowns," Alice agreed, because it was true. Her winter wardrobe was almost 2 years out of date thanks to her year of official mourning. She doubted that her true mourning would ever end, but at least the grief was no longer quite so sharp as it had once been. "But I don't need them today. And your grandmother is expecting me." Janelle groaned dramatically, as only a teenager could do. "Every time you visit the Abbey, people talk, and that's not doing my marriage prospects any favors." Alice resisted the urge to roll her eyes. As long as the king was providing a generous dowry, over and above what Alisoun herself could offer from her husband's estate, Janelle's marriage prospects were in no danger, as her daughter was well aware. "I've been visiting the Abbey once a week since before you were born," Alice said. "The damage is done, and I promise I'll find you a nice goat farmer to settle down with. I'm sure we can find one under the age of 60 who will take you despite the disgrace I've brought down upon you." "Very amusing," Janelle said, with a sour look on her usually sweet face. "I'll die of boredom here. All my friends are shopping today." "You might try reading a book," Alice suggested, receiving in response exactly the expression of disdain she expected. Alice had spent her whole life rebelling against the prevailing opinion that girls need not be educated beyond the basics required for managing a household, and jumped at every chance to read, especially if the subject matter was considered useless or inappropriate for females. Her daughter, however, would never dream of cracking open a book unless it was forced upon her. "As you wish," Alice continued with a careless shrug. I'm going to the Abbey, and if you're worried about death by boredom, you can always come with me. Your grandmother would love to see you. Janelle wrinkled her nose. Maybe in a month or so when the winds change again. Alice wasn't surprised by the answer, and while she did, on occasion, force both of her children to accompany her on these visits, Janelle was right, and today would be especially unpleasant thanks to the wind. Leaving her daughter to sulk and her son to catch up on some lessons he'd neglected, Alice headed to the coach house, which housed her carriages, horses, and chevals. Her groom was currying Smoke, her late husband's horse, when she entered the coach house. The poor creature was a shadow of his former self, his coat no longer gleaming, his head hanging in a habitual droop. Unlike Alice, Smoke had no friends and family to help ease the pain of loss and relieve the loneliness. Although Alice knew how to ride a horse, it was considered highly improper for a woman of her station to do so, and her son preferred his own horse to his father's. Alice soon fed the horse a lump of sugar as an echo of grief stabbed through her and tightened her throat. Which cheval would you like, my lady? The groom asked. Alice soon swallowed her grief and glanced over the row of inert chevals against one wall. The black, I should think, she said. It was the least lovely of the chevals, covered in plain black leather with no adornments, but it would show the dirt of the harbor district the least. The groom bowed, then moved to the chosen cheval. His eyes turned milky white as he opened his mind's eye and fed some roe into the cheval, which promptly came to life and gave a very horse-like snort and stamped one wooden leather leg. As if the crafter who'd made it thought someone might mistake it for a real horse, despite its lifeless eyes or its complete lack of personality. Then again, it wasn't temperamental or missing its master, as the real horses were. The groom hitched the cheval to Alice Soon's smallest carriage as her coachman Noble emerged from the servants' quarters in the rear of the coach house. The Abbey, my lady? He asked, as he helped her into the carriage. But it wasn't really a question, for he knew her routine by heart, as did the rest of her household. Falcor, her master of the guard, arrived right on Noble's heels. He would sooner fall on his sword than allow Alice to leave the house unaccompanied. She had nothing against the men of her honor guard, but there were just one more reason she longed for the days when Silnin was alive. As long as she'd had a husband to look after her, her father had allowed her to refuse the honor guard that was her due as a king's daughter. But the day after Silnin had passed, Falcor and his men had shown up on her doorstep and refused to leave. She frequently had to remind herself not to be unkind to the men who had no choice but to follow orders. Alice followed Falcor to climb onto the back of the coach without demur, having long ago resigned herself to the intrusion. Many women enjoyed more freedom when they became widows, but thanks to her royal lineage, Alice had less. She drew the shears over the carriage's windows. The carriage descended the three sets of terraces, then clattered through the crowded streets of the harbor district, the cheval expertly dodging pedestrians and horse-drawn carts and pits in the road, passing fish markets and taverns and storehouses, all teeming with noonday business. Alice's cheval carriage was well known along this route, and while the street merchants eyed it longingly, none tried to approach and offer her their wares. It was unseemly enough for a woman of her stature to set foot in the harbor district. To make purchases there was unthinkable. The carriage eventually wended its way to the half-moon-shaped front street, which ran from one end of the harbor clear to the other. A massive warship was docked at the naval base near the citadel, its crew and a platoon of dock workers busily repairing and refitting it after its tour of duty. Several smaller warships were docked quietly nearby, and one was putting out to sea, most likely for patrol duty. Alta hadn't seen true war since Alice was a child, and these days, Alta's navy mostly did battle with pirates and smugglers. but the Lord Commander of the Citadel.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?